Welcome to the Simply Authentic Podcast with Angie and Tanya, where we hope to inspire you to dream big and push past your fear, empower you to take charge of your own life, and challenge you to be the most authentic self you can be. Simply Authentic Podcast. I'm Angie Mullings.
And I'm Tanya Murfin. And we have a really exciting guest with us today. We have Gary Gibson, and he is the president and CEO of City Utilities of Springfield. So welcome, Gary. Welcome.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah.
Great for you to be here. So we want to start off and know a little bit about you. So tell us how you got into this industry to begin with and a little bit about your background.
Great. Yeah. So came to Springfield back in 1990. I was going to college at UMR and was very interested in a young lady who was going to SMS at the time.
Yes.
And so wanted to be a little bit closer to her and got an internship at City Utilities and just have never left. I really realized Springfield was such a great community.
Yeah.
And CU was a really special place. You know, I got to see the great things that Mr. Roundtree, who was the president at the time, was doing for a community, and just thought that this was such a great place to be, and I wanted to be a part of it. So had an opportunity to do a lot of different things. Like I said, to start off as an intern, kind of came up through the engineering ranks, but got my first responsibility to lead the gas department. And then right before the 2007 ice storm, I got responsibility for both electric gas and water from the distribution and operation side, and got to learn by fire as we kind of all experienced that together.
We did.
And then had the opportunity to lead SpringNet and kind of bring us into the gigabit economy and then do some economic development, and then have been in this role since 2019, so right before COVID. So when I get a new job, I think bad things happen, so I hope that's not going to be the case.
But it's the sign of a great leader, right, that you've overcome all these challenges and you're still here. So
absolutely.
I've got such a great team at City Utilities.
Awesome. So I'm gonna admit something here at the table, confession time. So when I knew you were coming on to visit with us, I did a little bit of research into CU, and I'm not a resident of Springfield. Haven't lived here for many years. I live in the Nixa Ozark area, and I felt really stupid. I learned a lot by just Google and looking at CU's very robust website and the pages that it leads you to, and it leads you to chamber relations, and I want us first to kind of let you tell us all the things that CU is doing in the community, because I'm not a resident, so maybe I'm not paying attention, maybe I'm not listening to deeper conversations, but if I feel that way, and I feel like I know what's going on in our community, there's lots of other people out there that feel the same way I do. So let's educate them about CU to begin with.
Yeah. Sure, you know, and we have a broad range of things that we do to support our neighbors. And if you look at our mission really doesn't say anything about utilities. It's to advance the quality of life in our community through innovation, engagement, and stewardship. And sometimes I get questions about that. It's like, well, that doesn't say anything about electric, gas, or water. And it's like, well, at the end of the day, we just want to make sure our neighbors have a great place that they can live, work, and play. And at the core, you know, some of the basic services we provide do that. So we provide electricity to about 125,000 customers. About 26% of those are actually outside the city limits. That goes back to when the city bought the Springfield Gas Electric Company back in 1945. So before 1945, it was a private-owned company, City Services Gas Company. You might see the Citgo gas stations that are still around. That was the parent company that owned the utility here in Springfield. But, you know, decisions were made in a boardroom in New York versus here locally, and so the founding fathers decided, hey, we would want to take our own destiny into our own hands, and made some good decisions. So they bought the utility company for $6.8 million in 1945.
Oh, my goodness. That was a lot of money.
It was a lot of money back then. But had about 18,000 electric customers at the time, but immediately got a 16% reduction in rates. So that's how we got the electric and the natural gas and the transit company. Back then, if you think 1945 was pre-World War II, we had electric trolleys. We had about 12 million rides per year. And so that's how we ended up running the bus system, which you know, now we're about a million rides a year. So people definitely like their cars a lot more. Then there was a big drought in 1954 and kind of the same issues. It was a privately run water company out of Portland, Oregon. And so the city bought the water company in 1957. And so we've grown from there, and then we got to add in SpringNet. In the 90s, you know, we had a fiber system that we kind of supported our own operations to the substations and controlling things out in the system, and we thought, okay, we can do more with this, and so let's go out and see how we can support. And so Mercy was our first customer on the fiber system, and so we started providing gigabit services. Well, back then it probably wasn't even gigabit, but, you know, megabit service to some of our large core institutions in town, but really kind of grew that over the years. And then back in 2019, we kicked off our fiber expansion project where we ran dark fiber throughout the whole community. And now we lease that to a couple tenants. Brightspeed's one of them, Total High Speed. And in fact, back in, well, this time last year in the Wall Street Journal, we were recognized, Springfield was recognized as the best place in America to work remotely. And they did their own research, and that was based primarily not only on low cost of living and the great amenities we have, but they cited the fiber expansion project and being a gigabit city as being part of that. So, so yeah, we do a lot of different things from you know, making sure we have clean drinking water for our customers to making sure the lights come on when you get up in the morning and we have heat for our homes and people get back and forth to work and now from the gigabit side. So, which people get a lot more upset today when their internet's not working than if their electricity is not working, because you can still work off your Wi-Fi on your phone. So.
Yes, you're right.
We
were talking about, I have SpringNet at my office, and to me, it's the best internet service I've ever had with anywhere I've lived or you know, had business. So it's very reliable. And one of my questions was going to be, how far out do you go? So you did this expansion, and so Brightspeed is part of SpringNet or CU. And how far out does that go?
So we broke the city up into seven areas, and so we pass about 118,000 doors, per se, you know, so whether it's a business or a house, we pass that. And so basically we ran the fiber because we do pipes and wires and poles really well. I don't think it's our wheelhouse to be that end providers to take care if your internet goes out during the Super Bowl or anything like that. So then we lease that fiber to a couple companies. Brightspeed's the biggest one, so they lease it across our whole footprint. So inside and outside of city limits, so pretty much anywhere we have electricity, there is now fiber. And then as we continue to grow, new subdivisions go in, kind of on the fringe, Total High Speed is leasing some of that dark fiber. And so we're expanding that. We did help form a regional broadband initiative that included all the surrounding cities. Martha out in Stratford is leading that group, and they did a study to see, okay, what's the possibility of then expanding to all these surrounding cities. Kind of slowed down a little bit, but actually I think we're going to re-engage with that and see how we can move that forward.
That's awesome.
Nixup thinks doing their own project, and they're big enough, I think they can and be really successful with it, but I think there's an opportunity to kind of use this core infrastructure that we have to make sure that we can get that out there.
Sounds like it.
Because, yeah, if you're out, I mean, even if you're just a mile outside the city limits, you may not have even good dial-up.
So from 2019, I mean, that's 5 years. That's a lot of progress in 5 years, in my opinion, when we've been waiting on broadband projects across the state for a long, long time. So that's amazing. So you guys have the transit system, obviously, utilities and water and the high-speed internet. You also manage some properties outside of, you have four different parks that you guys are, you use for electricity. You use some of the surrounding lakes and that kind of thing. So talk about what that responsibility is and what those are.
So I believe we are still the largest, city utilities are still the largest property owner in Greene County. And a lot of that's just because the buffer property around some of the things that we do, whether water treatment plants or power generation plants or just some of the things we have to have for normal operations. And, you know, we've had some good experience in the past with doing some partnerships with others to make that buffer property actually something that we can use. A good example of that is the Dan Kinney Family Center right next to Blackman Water Treatment Plant. That was buffer property we had, and then we did a partnership with them so they could build that. Now you've got the Miracle League ball field and such a great, I mean, I drive by there and there's people out there.
Great little park.
With that park all the time. Fellows Lake. I mean, if you haven't been up to Fellows Lake, have either of you
been up there?
We were just talking about that. The trails and
It was always a little hidden gem up there, but now you know, for years we were so protective that, you know, we want to keep people away from it because it's our drinking water and we want to protect that. But really it's had the opposite effect. Now we have so much education around water quality, and we've created so many water quality champions because people are using the trails and realize what a great amenity is, and they want to keep it pristine. And so instead of just us paying attention to it, now we think we saw 17,000 visitors to Fellows Lake on the trails last year. And now we've got almost 30 miles of trail out there. Plus it's a great lake, got great fishing in it. We're getting ready to build a large bridge across the south end of the lake so you can completely loop the trails.
We were able to get
$2.5 million in the state budget last year to fund that. So we just want to continue that. And then Lake Springfield's a perfect example of that. We had the James River Power Station that was really just such a great asset that served our community since 1957 when the first unit went in out there. Really stopped generating power out there from around 2016, 2017. We officially decommissioned the plant in 2020 when we blew the stacks up. That was a cool project.
It was.
It was a fundraiser for you and I. I like to blow stuff up, as I said. And so that was kind of neat. And we still have a couple combustion turbines there and a substation that will be able to integrate into the other great things that are going to happen out there. But there's you know, over 1,000 acres that we can use to, I think, just has such a good potential for to reimagine it as an entertainment district, a recreation district, education, so educate people on nature and water quality and the other great things. So really excited what we can do to go find some private partners to help us realize that vision. Yeah.
So that was one of the reasons we wanted you to come here today, Gary, because we attended the 417 Think Summit, and you spoke there about Lake Springfield. So let's get into that project and tell us from start to now where we're at, the how the concept was created and what has happened in the meantime and what is needed now.
Sure. So, you know, it all began kind of with Forward SGF occurring about the same time we were decommissioning the plant. And, you know, that project kind of slowed down with COVID when it hit, and because we had such great public involvement when we first kicked that project off, and Tim Rosenberry at the city, you know, is a great quality of life person that can help us kind of reimagine those things. So he had a vision as well. And, and we started talking about, okay, what can we do with this? It probably has a higher purpose than putting 1,000 acres of solar panels. You know, I would love to create energy out there, but I think we have other ways to do that. And that's probably not the highest and best use of that property. So through that project, we identified it as one of the sub areas of Forward SGF. And then we were fortunate to get Economic Development Agency grant through DED to do that. So they gave $800,000 for a study. The Hatch Foundation was another $100,000, and another $100,000 between city utilities and the city to see what we could do. And so Crawford Murphy Tilling and Steve Prangy and his team over there was hired to do a comprehensive plan. And hopefully you guys were part of some of that public engagement process. But, I mean, just a great turnout from the community to with lots of different ideas on what that should be. And, you know, they start off with this idea of making no small plans, which I think is great because we have to have a bold vision of what that could be. And I've seen so many interesting things of what that can look like. And so they've just completed that study. Our board at City Utilities accepted the plan. When we kind of use the word accepted versus approved intentionally, that, you know, hey, the project's over for the first part of the study, and now we're moving on to the next piece. And so I don't like just doing a plan and sitting it on the shelf and waiting for it to happen. We've got to go out and make it happen. So the next piece is City Utilities is going to take the lead, and we'll engage a broker or engineering firm to go out and actually beat the bushes and find private developers who want to do some great things down there. And, you know, what I keep telling people is this plan, I know it's not going to look exactly like the way it is in the plan. I mean, it's casted a vision of what it could be. And now I want to hear what the Johnny Morrises or the Hyatts or the Hiltons or whoever may want to do something out there have as a vision, and how we can activate that and make that happen. And then we know there's going to be some really cool public places around it too, like the park and those eco islands that they show out there. I think that's such a really cool way to
on the rendering.
It's one of the first things people see when they see this, like, those islands are so cool.
But, I know.
That's basically just been a detention basin for the last 70 years. And so right. all that silt that's come down the James River has been collected. Well, instead of dredging it and hauling it somewhere, let's just reuse it in the lake itself.
Yeah.
And from an environmental standpoint, that's a great use for that.
Absolutely.
And then makes it such a cool thing to go out there and do.
Yeah. And if you're not familiar with it, just go to lakesgfplan.com and you can see sort of the renderings there and everything that is in the works. I shouldn't say in the works, but it's visualized at this point. What a great asset that would be for our community, right? Wow. People, we know as realtors that people choose to live here based on quality of life many times, mm-hmm. the trail systems, mm-hmm. the lakes, and so that would be such an amazing asset, which leads to a discussion about economic development.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that CU has been a major player in that sandbox. You understand, like you said, in your mission statement, it's not just about providing utilities. It's about quality of place and all those things. So you ventured into Dean Thompson, who is an employee at mm-hmm. CU. You have a partnership now with the Chamber of Commerce in Springfield. And Dean is on loan, mm-hmm. I think that's the term you use, to the Chamber in hopes of moving forward some economic development projects. Can you talk about how that came about and what the benefits that you've seen from that? Is it working out? Is it something that is a long-term solution?
So I think, kind of back up a little bit, we've always been very involved in economic mm-hmm. development. That's really what utilities
yes.
do.
Yeah.
And, a great example of that was when I came here in 1990, we were just getting ready to do the Partnership Industrial Center. It was right after Zenith had left.
Yeah.
Yes.
You know, we had a lot of our eggs in one basket, and we didn't want to be in that position again.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And so city utilities and the city and the chamber went together to form Partnership Industrial Center.
Mm-hmm.
And just look at how many jobs are out there right now.
Yeah.
And then more often did Pick West,
right.
Which is about to be filled up now. We've had several lot sales just in the last year.
That's awesome.
To expand out there. But yep, the Dean Thompson thing and that on loan really kind of stemmed from our community leadership visit that the chamber does every mm-hmm. year to Northwest Arkansas.
Mm-hmm.
And people got really excited mm-hmm. and said, okay, look what we can do if we kind of take the same kind of tack and vision.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And people came back from that very, very excited, but I started to see a lot of different splintering off of that because people were so excited. Everybody was going lots of different directions.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And things tend to flounder when you do that.
Right.
And the chamber seemed to be, because of some personnel changes that they had,
mm-hmm.
Kind of pulling back a little bit on economic development, not mm-hmm. intentionally, but just, having to take a little bit of a pause as they kind of realigned.
Right.
And so really trying to figure out, how can we keep that from happening? I want to use my dollars as city utilities as efficiently as possible, so I don't mm-hmm. want to be giving it to 10 different efforts when they're all kind of repeating the same thing.
Right.
And so Dean and I and Stephanie O'Connor, who's mm-hmm. my chief technology and people officer, were sitting around talking and said, what if, Dean, you were city manager in Republic, you've got a strong economic development background, you've been doing this for us for the last 15 years.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think if we loaned you to the chamber? We had we already had an economic development contract with the Springfield Business Development Corporation.
Mm-hmm.
So he seemed like that would be an opportunity that he would be able to embrace and do. And so I approached Matt Morrow and said, hey, why don't we take that existing contract and make it an in-kind? So we were already paying the chamber $165,000. So instead of that cash payment for you to those services, right. why don't we loan you Dean mm-hmm. for the next couple of years to take that? And if for those of you who don't know Dean, his second job is Brigadier General Thompson
mm-hmm.
In the Army Reserves. He's one of the 110 Army Reserve generals in
wow.
the U.S. And
mm-hmm.
Has a way of being able to get things done
yes.
And has such a strong background that I just thought that was a perfect fit. And,
uh-huh.
and Matt Morrow jumped at the chance for that. So
mm-hmm.
Dean's already done a couple of things. So on the chamber front and SBDC, I think he has really revived the SBDC's strategic plan. He's been able to really hire some really good staff at the chamber mm-hmm. and get ready for succession planning
mm-hmm.
to move
that
forward. And then at the same time, he was working on this whole regionalism effort that the Hatch Foundation funded
mm-hmm.
to say, okay, what can we do to not just do things in Springfield, but do it on a regional basis?
Mm-hmm.
And, after doing a study through economic leadership, a firm out of South Carolina that they hired to help us look at all that, came up with a concept of that could be a leadership group driven by the private sector that really says, hey, we're going to come together and we're going to develop the region. That doesn't mean we're going to lose our identities. Ozark's not going to lose their identity, and Stratford's not going to lose theirs, because they all have great things that are unique to offer.
Yes. Right.
But we could make sure we're doing this together, because I would love it if I help one of my neighboring utilities get a large manufacturing site or something that, you know, hires 500 people because they're going to shop and work, and all the ancillary services are going to be in Springfield. So, you know, that rising tide lifts all boats. And
that's
so that has been really good. And they rolled out at Biz 417, their new group, because there was interest, called LORE, Leadership, and Ozarks Region Evolvement.
Yeah.
Not sure if evolvement is a word, but I kind of like
I like it. Yeah, I like that. I do too.
And the idea is, and let's move this to the next board. So Dean's going to be probably over the next year transitioning his time from that effort to the LORE effort, because the Chamber's kind of getting back on their own feet and ready to go.
Yeah.
Wow.
You know, it's interesting. So the Chamber takes these visits every year, and I've never been on one, but I hear about them all the time when people come back. And it seemed like this visit to Northwest Arkansas just really invigorated people. They loved what they saw there. Mm-hmm. They thought, why not us? Because we're just across the border.
Right.
We, you know, why don't we do this? And for those of you who don't know, regionalism has been talked about for years. I served on an economic partnership back 10, 15 years ago. And so it's not a new concept. It is, but it, because of things that happened, I mean, we went through a recession, we went through COVID, you know, and it's hard to hire people to continue that momentum. But it just seems like, man, everybody is on board. And when you go to things like Think Summit, that is a major point of emphasis there. And everybody wants to talk about that. And how do we make sure we're moving forward now, that we don't just go and hear about something, but we come back and we make it happen.
We do something.
Yeah. So kudos to CU for moving that forward and being a good partner in the community and finding a way to help out the Chamber when maybe the Chamber needed, you know, again, just all kinds of things going on, and it's hard to find employees, and it's hard to carry on that journey, because much like what we do, bringing in people to Southwest Missouri or anywhere is about building relationships with these companies that may want to relocate here, or whatever the case may be. It's all about relationship building. So,
and you know, and that's why Dean was such a perfect fit for that, because he had those years of relationships. And, you know, it helps that you know people, and
absolutely,
and, you
know,
people care about what you know. If they know you care, and everybody knew Dean cared about Southwest Missouri and the community, and so he came in with that trust already and those relationships, and. Yeah, I'm with you. I've been on several of the community leadership visits, and you know, sometimes we bring a nugget or two back and are able to do them, but it seemed like Arkansas was kind of a special trip, and maybe it was because it was so close to home.
Yeah.
And you see, I was down there last weekend, actually, went down to see the latest exhibit at Crystal Bridges and went downtown afterwards, and it just is amazing the amount of people that are out there, and you know, we can do the same thing here.
Absolutely,
and we don't have to do exactly what they do.
Nope.
I don't want to
look
like Northwest Arkansas. I want to be our own thing here.
That's right. Yes,
but we've got the resources and the assets to do that. We just need to have the bold vision to make it happen.
We do.
Yes.
Yeah, and get everybody in the sandbox playing together.
Right. Yeah.
Do you ever find that the cities on the the outside of Springfield, do they grasp the same concepts the same way? Do you have cities that put up, you know, a stop sign and say, we don't want your help because we want to do it ourselves?
So there's always a little bit of fear there.
Yeah.
That was some of the conversation when we first started talking about the regionalism effort is, you know, well, you know, we're Ozark. You know, we've got our great thing going on down here. It's like, well, you do. And that's, let's keep what you have down
we
there
want to help
in your
you.
Identity. We want to help you.
Yeah.
And so there's that little bit of fear at the beginning.
Sure.
But I think once you start through the process, and Dean's done such a really good job of that, it's like,
that's
it's
awesome.
Not, this isn't, hey, we want you to help pay to do things in Springfield, because that's never going to work.
Right.
You know, we want to say, okay, what makes the most sense? And how can we leverage your strength and our strength to make it a cool area?
Mm-hmm.
And so,
and understanding that these site selectors, they don't know just Springfield. You know, we're not, we think we're big. We're not that big in the grand scheme of things. So they don't recognize just Springfield. They have to, and they're going to have to draw employees from not just Springfield.
Yeah, so they're looking at that 18 plus county area to say they're going to, from a labor shed pool and then what they're going to support. But, but you know, we're right here at a couple of interstates. And so from a location standpoint, we've got relatively low cost of living. We have a lot of people have really great work ethic in Southwest Missouri. And so people look at us very favorably that way. So we just need to build on that.
And growth is good. I think that's also a fear that, you know, well, we don't want Nixa to be any bigger. We don't want Ozark to be any bigger. And, you know, people want to come here. I think we have to embrace that. I have to, change is inevitable, no matter what you do or where you're from or where you live. So I think embracing that also is a concept that we all need to jump on board with, because look at the great things that can come of that.
This is where I want to live the rest of my life, and I've got two kids, and you know, one's in St. Louis now, and the other one just took a job in Kansas City, so I'm always thinking, how can I make Springfield a place they want to come back and live? So.
And that's been a charge for a long time. We educate them here, and then, because we have, what, five great universities, and then they move on somewhere else. If we have these great quality of life things in place, and we have industries that want to come here, then they're more apt to stay. And the statistic you brought up, or the claim that we were one of the best places to work remotely, that all also opens up doors, right? If
it
we've
really
got the broadband opportunity, then work from home, and you can work from anywhere.
That's
why not work from Springfield?
That's right. Exactly.
I love that. I want to shift gears just a little bit, because I heard something this morning that's going on at the legislature. I heard the term, this is the first time I've heard this term, but water wars. And I'm curious if you, because they, it's going through the state legislature right now that we will not sell our water. And as part of the economic development groups that I've been a part of, I've watched that kind of migrate across the country, right? Started out in the West Coast. They have water woes. We are blessed with a lot of water, but we may not be forever. So do you, is that something that's been on your radar? And is there anything that CU is doing, I guess, to, what's CU's position, or, you know, what is CU doing in that regard with water?
Yeah, that's been a huge issue. And from a couple of things in Jefferson City right now is, is kind of a guardrails project around water quality, and just make sure that, you know, we're all, you know, I grew up out in the country and doing farm work. And, and so, you know, I'm kind of sometimes aligned with Farm Bureau, and I understand that, you know, you have to have hog operations, they don't smell the best and, and things. But I think there's also, they want to be good stewards of the environment too. And so we have guardrails that let people farm and make a living doing what we've grown up doing in Missouri, and but still protect water quality. But the quantity piece is the other issue. And we've been working for years to secure water for Springfield and this area, and even as far down as Joplin. So Joplin's in real need of water right now. And I kind of go back to the 1950s, you know, why maybe Springfield grew and Joplin didn't grow. And I think we're kind of in that same precipice now, that if they don't find water sources down in Joplin, we're going to continue to grow as long as we pay attention to it, and they're not. And, but it's kind of an interesting thing. They're really close to Grand Lake, which is Oklahoma. But Oklahoma has a law, you can't pump water out of the state. And so they're trying to find out, you know, where they're going to get their water. And they talked about building a small reservoir similar to Fellows Lake. And, but you have to have a way to fill that up other than just rainfall. And so several years ago, you know, we secured some additional storage space in Stockton Lake to help us supply Springfield's needs through 2030, 2040. I think people finally realized that we weren't drawing Stockton Lake down. You know, we have 50,000 acre feet of storage, which is basically 2 feet of level in the lake. And, and the most we've ever taken out in a year is 6 inches. So we make very little impact at the lake. But we've also been working with the Corps of Engineers to get another reallocation of water from Stockton Lake. And when I say reallocation, the way the Corps allocates their lakes is there's so much water in there for flood control, there's so much for power generation, and then there's some for recreation. So we're reallocating water from power generation space to drinking water space. And, you know, I wear both hats, so I hate to give up that power, but you can make power in other ways, but you can't make drinking water any other way. So we've been going, that's been about a 13-year process since we started that, and it has finally made it to D.C. to the Assistant Secretary of the Army, who has to make the final say on it.
Okay.
We're hopeful by the end of this fiscal year we'll have that allocation of water, which will meet Springfield's needs probably through 2070 to 2080.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
But part of that group is there's also water designated for the surrounding communities, Ozark, Nixa, Rogersville, Republic, mm-hmm. and they're all part of was originally called Tri-State Water Resource mm-hmm. Coalition, include Kansas and Oklahoma, found out they couldn't play. Mm-hmm. So now it's the Southwest Missouri Joint Municipal Utility Commission, Southwest Missouri Water is what they call it. So we're all part of that, working together to try to get that water.
Yeah.
Today could be the first day of our next long-term drought. Yeah, that's the way I always look at it. And maybe I'm too much of a worrier, but
You get paid to worry that way.
Worry on all of our behalfs, right? Wow, that's so interesting.
I think it's probably because we're so blessed with water. I don't think that the general public really thinks of us being as a shortage, even though we have had several droughts over the last couple of years. And to hear it's as close as Joplin, you know, being challenged.
But I think it's an advantage from an economic development standpoint.
Certainly.
We have the water. That's where people are going to want to come.
Right.
We just want to make sure we use it wisely.
Yes. Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, I think we have covered it. Have we missed anything?
Well, I want to ask one other question.
Okay.
Because you have gone up in the ranks in CU, we talk about leadership a lot on this podcast. We have a lot of business owners that come on. We have a lot of people that are in those positions where they're leading their companies and their organizations. Do you have tips or maybe I should ask it this way? What is maybe the most valuable lesson you have learned with regard to leadership over your tenure?
I kind of view myself as a servant leader, and that's kind of why I enjoy working at City Utilities so much, because we're a service organization. We're here to serve our neighbors.
Yeah.
And I really got that ingrained into me from a young age from my dad. I remember asking him, I still remember being in the middle of a cornfield on a hot Sunday afternoon. Uh-huh. He was working on a pump for a neighbor, and I asked him, how much are you getting paid for this? And he's like, I'm not getting paid. We're helping our neighbor because he needs help.
So
I think he kind of ingrained that into me. Mm-hmm. And so I get energized by helping others succeed, and have had such a great team of people to work with. The old adage that, you can get amazing things done if you don't care who gets the credit for it.
Right,
I think that's the most valuable lesson. And there's always
more
than one right way to accomplish a goal. I mean, don't get so rigid that this is going to be the only solution, because that's what Springfield does well, is collaborate. And if we know what that goal is, I mean, it may not be the exact way I want to do it, but if we can get there, I'm really cool with that. So
Awesome.
So.
Yeah, that's a great tip. I love that. And thank you for your time.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I've learned so much today.
Yeah.
And I hope that our listeners take the same thing away from this, and that they're more interested the next CU article they see, or the collaboration they see going around town. It means something. It means a lot to the future of all of us.
Yes.
And just remind everybody who's watching and listening that, you own us, you're our neighbors, and so that's who owns the utility, and we want to make sure we're serving your needs. And you mentioned our website.
Yes.
Go check our website out.
Absolutely.
Look for us on Facebook and Instagram. And and if you don't have our mobile app, make sure you do that, because we'll text you now when your power's out.
Yes,
we'll
I love that.
When it comes back on.
Yes,
love
that. I love that communication.
Awesome.
And yes, we will include all of those websites and your connections in the show notes, so be sure and check out those show notes.
Thanks so much for having me.
Thank you. Thank
Great
you.
To meet you.
Thanks for joining us.
We'll see you next time. Thank you for listening to the Simply Authentic podcast. Be sure to hit follow so that you can see each episode as it pops up weekly.